Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the lovely Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Join me like he does each week as the co-host of this program, the quarterback of the program, Mr. Stone Lebanowitz. Stone is coming to you from his broadcast center in the Sunshine State of Florida. Well, Mr. Lebanowitz, we started off with 24, and we have whittled them down. It's quarterfinals weekend, but that means we've got a little bit of business left from the second round. Let's get right to it. Up first, number one, Montana State 49, Tennessee Martin 17. This is a ball game that producer Sam Cittadini and I went over the mountain passes and were present on the sideline for this one. Tennessee Martin, their run defense, gave Montana State some trouble early on. Stopped them on a third and less than a yard. Made Montana State pump the ball a couple times. But I think that they decided to pick their poison and make Tommy Mellott beat him with his arm, and boy, howdy, did he do so.
Yeah, and what a time to do it as well. A lot of career highs. You see the 300-yard mark. You see the four touchdown passes. What's ironic, Kevin, leading up to this point, we talked about the damage that he was going to do when the weather gets cold with his legs. But this is really nice to see because similar to Aiden Bauman at South Dakota, he hasn't been asked to do this, but he checked that box. He can absolutely do it. These Bobcats, unblemished 13-0. They're the scariest team left in the field.
And Stone, you've been saying that since the preseason, so you were not jumping on the Bobcats bandwagon by any stretch of the imagination. What did you see coming into week one that made you think that? Because you took a lot of ridicule for it from people in the Dakotas.
That preseason schedule, when you saw New Mexico State, that's a winnable FBS game. This team led by a bunch of seniors. If they were to win that game, they were 100% going undefeated. They were going to beat Montana. They knew it before that first ball even got kicked off. And Tommy had a chance to just fill the trophy case. I also said that was the best offensive line in the entire country before the season started. It's all playing out.
Number two, North Dakota State, 51. Number 15, Abilene Christian, 31. When Sam Cittadini and I were on the sideline in Bozeman Saturday, you saw a whole bunch of people all over that stadium looking at their phones and then looking at the guy next to them. And showing people phones when NDSU was down 17-3. It was like, what in the world is going on? But here's the thing about NDSU. When they came out flat, which they did, no doubt about that. The coach even mentioned that this week in the press conference. They weren't getting anything done on the offensive side of the ball, really. The defense, Abilene Christian, went up and down the field on them. And the special teams bailed them out, took the roof off the Fargo Dome with a 100-yard kickoff return touchdown. That was the biggest play in the football game, Stone.
Yeah, and it inevitably led to 31 unanswered points. That's a team that believes in themselves. That's a team that's been tested now a few times, right? ETSU lost to Colorado. And to get this one, especially after a bye when a lot of those teams start slow, and that is a scary spot. They got this win, and they were moving and grooving. This was a huge one.
Kind of an odd stat line for North Dakota State, 274 yards passing, only 101 yards rushing, and they gave up 192 rushing yards last week. North Dakota State's defense did. Guess what the team coming in to play them in the Fargo Dome likes to do this week, y'all? The Mercer Bears. They like to run to football. Going to be an interesting matchup. Number three, South Dakota State, 35. Number 14, Montana, 18. Interesting ball game here. I thought it would be closer, and you really have to take the 18 points Montana scored with a grain of salt because they scored 8 of them with 4 seconds left on the clock, y'all. So complete domination by the Jackrabbits. They even pulled out some trick plays to make it fun. Mark Ranowski, only 12 completions, Stone. They didn't need him, so they didn't use him. They ran the ball, played defense, and blew Montana out.
We figured that was going to be the case here. So odd to me, if I hadn't seen this box score and watched this game back and seen the stat graphic come up on the screen that he only had 12 completions, I would not have believed you. He was so confident. He was so crisp in all of the dropbacks in that first and second quarter. This team loves being at home. Montana was a dead horse already, and all the Jackrabbits did was beat it. By the way of Griffin Wilde. Griffin Wilde's for real. Griffin Wilde can play pretty much at any school in the country. FBS, FCS, it really doesn't matter. I think he's a next level guy, and he might get paid to play the game. And when he got loose, and this is very similar to North Dakota State, to come off of the bye with a win like this against a team like that and have the gears turning in the first quarter, that pays dividends. I love it for the Jacks. It was a huge win. And yeah, Montana snuck that cover at the end.
Number 4, South Dakota, 42. Number 13, Tarleton State, 31. I feel like the Yotes got exposed a little bit here, Stone. Tarleton State did what they wanted to do on offense most of the day. Only some mistakes. Now, South Dakota had a few things to do with making them make those mistakes. But without those three interceptions, we're talking about Tarleton State playing this week and not South Dakota. We told them that they had to know where the three guys were for Tarleton State on offense at all times. They did a pretty good job on Kavion Britton, but Darius Cooper had him a day, Stone.
No, he's nasty. And he came right out of the gates with it, too. And I think that for Tarleton State, I had a 35-30 prediction here. And that was because they were playing in a dome. And Tarleton knew they were going to take that shots. And they knew that Cooper was going to get most of them. It didn't matter what quarter it was, what down in distance it was. And I think those are the type of things you can do with the senior quarterback. But to see Bauman and to see Travis Tice get after it in a huge game, this South Dakota team, Kevin, I don't know how you feel, but this is not one that I've seen in, I don't know, the last 5 years. This crew just looks different, and Aiden Bauman at the helm, they're super dangerous. He's super poised. I think that they all think that they can do it, and that's very interesting. So I thought this performance was cool. I love the high-scoring affair, and I love a team in South Dakota who hasn't been scored on like that come out of this one victorious.
Number 5, UC Davis, 42. Number 12, Illinois State, 10. I hate to say it, y'all, but I told you so. I told you so. So did Stone. This was not going to be a very good football game, and it wasn't. UC Davis dominated this thing from Jump Street, and they showed exactly who they are. Hastings can really spin the football. Lan Larrison played with a chip on his shoulder because he's not getting invited to that awards ceremony where they're going to pat people on the back down there in Frisco. And I really believe, like, any awards ceremony honoring the best player in FCS football but doesn't include Lan Larrison probably isn't a legitimate deal. They showed that. They jumped all over Illinois State and didn't let up. And you know what? The two best mustaches on head coach in Division I football, well, the one leading UC Davis had the better football team. I'll say that. Not sure he's got the better stash, but it's close. Number 6, Incarnate Word, 13. Number 11, Villanova, 6. This was my favorite matchup of the week last week, y'all. Can you sense that ain't exactly true in my voice? There was a lot of rain here, and Incarnate Word, evidently their high-powered offense that Lobanowitz has gone on about all season, super high-octane offense, can only put up 13 points against a bad Villanova team in the rain at home. Boring game, I thought, but Incarnate Word, look, they won the football game. They did what they were there to do, and they emerged victorious. I just wonder where the offense has been lately, Stone. When you look at their scoring output as the season's gone along, it's gone down, 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 down. Down. They haven't been ate up by injuries a whole bunch. I'm just wondering why Incarnate Word can't put the ball in the end zone lately.
This is a game that I think if you didn't watch, you can't speak on. And Kevin, I'm not speaking to you whatsoever. I'm speaking to the rest of the FCS landscape. And for those fans watching in the playoffs, supporting their team, and you're checking a score and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. This is an Incarnate Word team. Like you mentioned, Kevin, who has been scoring less and less points each week. It was wet. It was rainy. So they figured out a way to do this. I think the one thing Incarnate Word has going for them is the amount of adversity they face. They're in games all the times. And when you can learn how to get out of them, it gives the team confidence and they get closer. And I think this Incarnate Word team can score as many points as they want on an open Saturday, but this one was a snooze fest and it had a lot to do with the weather. But yeah, you can take this one here. This one, you win the battle.
Number 7, Mercer, 17. Number 10, Rhode Island, 10. This one was also a bit of a snooze fest, Stone. Mercer did what they've done all year. Played good defense, and they kind of held on in this one, right? It was close into the fourth quarter. Mercer had a pick six, one drive where they were able to put the ball in the end zone, and they kicked a field goal, and that was enough to beat number 10, Rhode Island, at home. They advanced to take on NDSU this week. Number 8, Idaho, 34. Lehigh, 13. This one went about as expected. We thought it would, Stone. Idaho put up 410 total yards, 318 through the air. Just 92 on the ground, so that's a little bit worrisome. But they have a beat-up running back room, going to get some guys back this week to take on Montana State. But Idaho did what they needed to do. They took Lehigh out of the game early, and they kept everybody upright and healthy. Very solid win to advance to take on, in a rematch, number 1, Montana State this week.
Yeah, and I think in retrospect, if you were Jason X, something that I feel like I missed here was an opportunity to build Jack Lane's confidence up. This is a game where you knew going into it, he could could have probably more than 300 yards passing. And oh yeah, he did just that, and three touchdowns to go along with it. This is a game where you didn't sweat from the first kickoff to the very last whistle. Jack Lane played really good football, distributed the football. There were receivers going for almost double digit catches. There were double digit targets all over the place. This was a trademark Jason Eck game. I don't care who he was playing, and they want that lick back with Montana State. So things are about to get interesting.
Time for us to take a break. When we come back, we'll board that merry-go-round for the FCS coaching carousel again, and Stone and I will discuss what's happening around the country in the transfer portal. I know you'll want to hang out for that discussion. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Well, Stone, that merry-go-round, she's still going around. And we had a couple of more coaches leave their posts this week in FCS Nation. Andy Thompson left Sacramento State to join Troy Taylor at Stanford. And Sacramento State hasn't hired a new guy yet. And in a move that surprised some people, maybe didn't surprise others, Trey Lamb left ETSU to take the job at Tulsa to become the head coach for Tulsa. Lamb had signed a contract extension just last week. And he said that leaving after 1 year would be a bad move for his reputation. Well, I guess, Stone, when it was just an abstract thought, right, it would have been. But when someone dangles $1.3 million in your face, it becomes not abstract anymore, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't. And it just sucks. Something like this is so obvious. It's so public, right? You can always go back and pull sound bites, watch a press conference where he says something like that. And there's just so many of these situations coming up. And the fact that we're going to sit here and have a further conversation about the transfer portals and what these kids are doing and how it's wrong and how it hurts the sport. You have a situation like this. Now, I'm not pointing a finger and saying those things at Trey Lamb. Why? Because you understand the situation. It makes sense. Or should I say the math adds up? But it does make me halt on any negativity that one might have towards the transfer portal, because look what Trey Lamb did on paper. It's hard to dispute it. Like I said, the one thing that I take away from it is that I can't go as hard on the kids and I can't go as hard on the transfer portal when you have grown men literally doing the same thing.
At the very least, when he signed this extension, it upped the buyout of his contract that Tulsa had to pay. So for people who are hating on Trey Lamb because he just signed an extension, well, in a way of looking at it, he kind of did you a favor, because now you have more money to go out and hire your next coach and pay them, because Tulsa had to pay more money in the buyout. See, I can be positive, Stone. I can look at both sides of an issue and find the rainbows and the unicorns in it. Eric Schmidt got hired at North Dakota. This is like his third stint at North Dakota as a coach. He played there, cut his teeth there as a coach, then went up to FBS for a little bit, gained that experience. Eric Schmidt's a good football coach, and he's a North Dakota Fighting Hawk through and through. We're going to have a little interview with him sometime in the next week or so that you'll be watching socials for, I hope. We'll have it on the show in our new coaching hire show that we usually do in one of the weeks that we take off before the championship game. We'll have a whole bunch of those guys. Everybody who's been hired at every major program, we'll sit down and have an interview with, so stay tuned for that. But you mentioned the transfer portal, Stone, and I think people are going to be surprised at my take on it. I come off as this crudgy old curmudgeon, right? And, you know, I like things the way they are because of where I'm from and how I like things. But what bothers me about the whole thing is that I think some young men are getting some very, very poor advice from people who were supposed to have their best interests at heart. If you're transferring from an FCS school right now and expecting to have a legitimate opportunity to get to an FBS school, there aren't going to be a lot of guys like that this year. The FBS, they're going to have a roster limit, y'all, and they're going to have to start cutting guys to get down to that limit. So you're going to have to be a very exemplary FCS player to get picked up by an FBS squad this year. We're going to see a lot of guys who maybe played a little bit at their FBS school who are going to be playing at FCS next year. A lot of guys who are transferring from FCS hoping for FBS are going to be playing at Division II next year. There's going to be a lot of movement down. I'm just not sure if there's going to be a lot of movement up this year in the portal, Stone.
Yeah, a lot of bad advice, and to a heck of a lot of student athletes. It's actually sad to see when you see these accounts on social media highlighting the numbers, the amount of players that are in the transfer portal and the amount of players that land on their targeted roster, or just generally how many players make it out of the transfer portal. And if you really want to get into the weeds, into the X's and O's side of things here, for me, what's most frustrating, just because I know how frustrated head coaches get even speaking to some, there's a new season come November, December, where these teams are in the playoffs. Like Timmy P at North Dakota State having to address Cole Wisnowski in that they're moving forward with the players that are on their roster. You're watching guys, Kenny Dillingham, Arizona State having one of the best seasons in the FBS, have to talk about the meetings that he's laid out for the guys in the transfer portal while he's competing for a conference title. This is happening in the FCS. It's happening in the FBS. It's happening at Division II level. It's really hard to track. It's really hard to see what's going on in real time, and there are people invested in doing so, but it's just a headache for all of us as fans, and you're watching some of the best players in the country get really bad advice and end up kind of throwing their careers away. So it's a mixed bag right now, but I just want to harp on it again. It's a lot of bad advice to a lot of people, Kev.
If you're a player thinking about entering the transfer portal, have a plan. And if you don't have a plan, don't be surprised when you get Munsoned. And I saw this for the first time involving a college athlete this week, Stone. A media outlet put out that a young man for the University of South Carolina had agreed to a new deal to stay at South Carolina. Now, that rubbed me the wrong way, right? You see that with free agency in the National Football League or Major League Baseball. It was the first time I'd seen agreed to a new deal like he was a pro. But I guess that's where we are now. And this is what people said they wanted. Remember that. This is what people said they wanted. And now they're reaping it, dude. And for the people who said this is what they wanted, have at you, y'all. You got it. Now you got to own it and like it, I think.
It further speaks to my point. You literally cannot track it. You can't. Because in that same tweet, I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's happened multiple times since that very first tweet from that media outlet on three. You talk about these players signing a new agreement, signing a new deal, and that they're evaluated to make $1.5 million in NIL. We're not going to follow up with that. We're not going to keep track of that. If that player gets hurt 4 or 5 games in the season, it's probably, odds are, a player that we don't already know. And when he sits out the rest of the season, we don't know what's in that NIL contract and if he makes that money. And then fast forward 6, 7 more months, and he's in the transfer portal looking for a new team. So we can't track it. It's a headache. It's exhausting for every single one of us. And then we just get the cherry on top with this player has signed a new deal. It's something that I didn't think would get out of control that is just slowly creeping towards chaos.
Well, there's no chaos coming up, because coming up is the preview segment where Stone LeBanowitz and I will preview all the quarterfinal games taking place this week and the Celebration Bowl that's also taking place this week between Jackson State and the South Carolina State Bulldogs. We'll be right back. The preview segment's coming up next right here on FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Well, the quarterfinals are here. This is the preview segment. Y'all know what we're doing here. This is where Stone and I are going to take a trip all over FCS Nation and preview these games taking place in the quarterfinals this week. Number 7, Mercer, is at number 2, North Dakota State. Stone, I'm going to let you go first because I'm a noted Southern Conference homer here. I know what I think is going to happen here, but what's your take on Mercer traveling to the Fargo Dome to take on NDSU on ABC television? First time Mercer Bears are going to be on national, not cable, but national television in the history of the program.
Yeah, buddy. I love it. I love it. And I think you have a case where it's two teams who want to play their style of football. They want to play the kind of football that they're most comfortable playing, and that's running it and playing really good defense. I think you're going to watch a team who knows they're playing at home, who knows that they're playing against a team who hasn't played in many of these games, and they're going to try to maintain the clock, have a lot more time of possession. And I think at one point, I think closer to halftime maybe, this thing becomes a stalemate. I'm excited for SoCon football to be brought to the Valley and kind of a Valley team to get valleyed. I want this thing to finish 23-20, 20-17, and I think that's what we're going to get.
Mercer has the number one run defense in all of FCS football, and that's from a conference, the SoCon, where they know how to run the football down there, Stone. I've been around it my whole life. That's what they do in the SoCon. The Samford teams and the Western Carolina teams are the aberration. They are not the rule down there, sir. And their passing stats against are a little bit skewed because most people in that league just didn't even try to run the ball after the first quarter when they had no success. They just dropped back and tried to throw the ball to stay in the game. or to try to move the football at all. And they had some success there. But Mercer has two All-Southern Conference defensive backs, first team. And that's a league that's produced some fellas in the defensive backfield lately. I think that what that leads me to believe is that Mercer is going to do what everybody else has tried to avoid having happen to them this year. I think Mercer is going to try to take the run away, and they're not going to be afraid at first to say, "All right, Cam Miller, go beat us." I mean, nobody else has had success with that, but nobody else has really this season, after maybe the first couple of ball games, has really tried that, has really said, "We're just going to take the run away from you and make the quarterback and the receivers beat us." The SoCon homer in me says, I like those two first team all SoCon DBs better than I like the outside wide receivers for North Dakota State. Tell me I'm wrong.
You spot on. And I think you're going to see a game very similar to a North Dakota State, South Dakota State matchup. I really do. I think this is one that has that Service Academy feel where both these teams are going to try to figure it out on the fly and it becomes a chess match. And here's where I think the edge really lies here. It's in that Mercer linebacking core. There will be second and shorts, third and shorts. There will be a few fourth downs sprinkled into this one where the Bison or the Bears go for it. Whoever comes up with those, I think, wins this game. And Kev, I kind of lean the way of Mercer. Mercer, you're going to crack that ETSU tape and try to pick on a lot of the things that they did really well. Kev, do you remember who had a day for the Buccaneers against that Bison squad?
It was Irby running the football.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm telling you, this recipe here is Mercer thinking that they can run the football and they're going to run him and hand him that ball off 17, 18, 19 times. I'm excited. I really am. And I think it's a good point. I think this is going to be another situation where we see Cam Miller in the fourth quarter kind of have to do it himself. And he's had success doing it up until this point. But I do think this is another game and another spot where the underdog has more than a puncher's chance. Although these spreads are lopsided and it seems like another week of chalk is on the horizon, there's not. There's not. We got to watch these things from start to finish because a lot of these are going to get interesting. And I think this one right here is one of them.
Well, Stone, you know when an FCS team goes and plays a real good FBS team close, right? And the pundit thing to say is, well, they weren't intimidated going into here, and they weren't intimidated by this quarterback or those receivers. And a lot of times, you don't really see that come to fruition, right? But I'm sitting here thinking about this football game, and I'm thinking, is Mercer scared of Cam Miller? I mean, they face Cole Gonzalez. Who would you rather have, as a pure passer, a pure quarterback? I know who I'd rather have, and I have a pretty good feeling that I think I know your answer to that. But we're going to see, man. This is what makes these playoffs so cool is that we get to see guys from all over the country who can do their thing, and we're going to see who is better at doing the things that are strengths for both, weaknesses for both. Hey, man, there's a little small dude with bald hair and a bow tie who ought to walk into the Fargo Dome Saturday and say, "Let's get it on." And that little small bald man should be referee Mills Lane, as far as I'm concerned. But let's just go ahead and move along to the next matchup, which is also going to be one that I'm really looking at and going, I don't know what to expect here. We've got number six Incarnate Word at number three South Dakota State. These teams played earlier in the season, same way that Idaho and Montana State did. It's weird to have two rematches this in the quarterfinals when only one of those rematches are teams that play in the same league, right? Very strange, especially with the way FCS scheduling is done. But Incarnate Word, this was a 17-all ball game in the third quarter way back in September, right? I don't know if that's what we're going to see this week in Brookings, mostly because I don't know if Incarnate Word is going to be able to keep up with what South Dakota State's going to do offensively. And that's a strange thing to say because since Incarnate Word has come on the scene, it's been about offense, 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 going fast and then going faster. But I don't know if that's a winning combination for them, even if they're able to do it. I think if South Dakota State wants to play a slow ball game and run the football and you're Incarnate Word, you've got to try to play into that a little bit too. So I know that Zach Calzada is one of your favorite quarterbacks in the country this season, and that's not without reason. The guy is really good, and he can make throws like a Sunday quarterback can. But I'm just curious if Incarnate Word's defense can hold up for four quarters up against that offensive line South Dakota State has and the running attack South Dakota State has. I'm not leaning towards them being able to do so.
No, I'm not either. I think this is a bad matchup, and I don't think this game is remotely close, to be honest with you, Kev. And I think one of the things that I've been giving some thought that I'm interested to bounce off of you and I'm interested to bounce off of the audience is a serious question. Yes, they met in week two, right? Was that a better incarnate word team in week two than it is right now? There's a case to be made. It's not like incarnate word's been tested for the last 2 months. They've cruised. They've played in a conference that pretty much favored in every single game, and a lot of them by double digits. And when you look at where they finish in the season in the conference, you see pretty much every statistic offensively and defensively in the top five. There are things like that that they're celebrating. They're ranked second, fumbles recovered, defensive touchdowns, red zone defense. That's all against a schedule that isn't all that tough. And here you come into a South Dakota State matchup. Who's going to score when they're in the red zone? Who's not going to fumble the ball? Who's not going to turn it over? Who's not Mark Gronkowski, a guy who's not going to throw pick sixes? So none of these stats are really relevant in this thing. Incarnate Word hasn't been able to find any offense, and they're definitely not going to against this Jackrabbit defense. So I think this is a lopsided victory. I just don't think Incarnate Word is clicking right now, and it spells trouble for a South Dakota State team who's coming off a slacking of Montana and is on path to go back to back to back right now. And oh yeah, this one's in Brookings.
Number five, UC Davis is at number four, South Dakota. I'm intrigued by this one. Two very good quarterbacks, two very good running backs. South Dakota has two very good running backs. UC Davis has Len Larison. The offensive line, I think, is a wash. They're both pretty darn good units. And Davis has a very underrated defense, and South Dakota has a pretty celebrated defense, right? I look at this ball game, and I just don't see how either side's going to gain a clear advantage in this business, sir. What one does well is a strength for the other, and vice versa. A very, very, very funny matchup. I like Hastings at quarterback for UC Davis, but the guys he's throwing to aren't exactly household names in FCS, are they? So he's spreading it out using Larison. Larison had 87 receiving yards last week. I expect a lot of that this week from Davis and South Dakota. When you've needed to move the football and get down the field, Bauman's led you, and he's been able to do that. Last week, you scored a whole bunch of points against a defense not as good as the one you're going to see this week in UC Davis. I don't really know how to pick this one, Stone, and I don't like sitting on the fence because sitting on the fence will crease your butt, but mine has got a big old crease right in the middle of it right now because I'm not sure which way to lean on this one here.
I'm sitting on that damn fence with you. I honestly, Kevin, I'm so serious when I say this. This is my favorite matchup of the entire FCS season up until this point. I mean, you've watched both of these teams grow into a team who thinks they're capable of winning a national championship. And if you were to ask me that 3 years ago about UC Davis, I would have laughed at you. If you would have asked me that 3 years ago with South Dakota, I probably would have laughed at you. But here they are, and I think very, very, very similar to last week. That Tarleton State team wants to be in a dome. They have weapons. Well, yeah, so does UC Davis and a quarterback in Myles Hastings who loves to air it out. I love this one. This one has star power written all over it. I do think there's some truth to the fact that the quarterbacks will take a backseat early in this one, but one of them will prevail. And I know it's cliche and I know I say it often, but whatever quarterback wants to play the better game is going to lead their team to a victory. If Aiden Bauman goes off, this team cruises. If you see it with Myles Hastings and he goes off, this team cruises. Both of these teams have the ability to explode on offense whenever it's asked upon. So this one might start slow, but I do think they fill up the box score here. This one's got popcorn matchup. You got to get eyes on this one if you didn't plan to.
And in the Celebration Bowl, number 19, Jackson State versus number 15, South Carolina State. Those rankings are ours from our FCS Nation Top 25, the final regular season poll. Jackson State comes in out of the SWAC and South Carolina State out of the MEAC. South Carolina State, not a lot was expected of them this year, Stone. Legendary coach Buddy Pough retired, and people thought that that was going to be the end of South Carolina State football being good. But you know what? It's not. South Carolina State quarterback Eric Phoenix has been absolutely outstanding. I love the way that young man plays. He's a lefty, so that messes with your sight lines for everybody involved who's not on his team. And he's also a kid that will lay you slap out if he's running the ball and you stand in between him and pay dirt. That is a dude, Eric Phoenix, for South Carolina State. And Jackson State, I don't really know how good they are, Stone. With the SWAC scheduling, they don't play a lot of teams out of conference, right? Other FCS teams. South Carolina State matched up and beat the Citadel in Charleston this year. I know what the Citadel had, pretty decent football team this year. And I know what a South Carolina State versus a Citadel matchup would normally look like. And it wouldn't have looked like South Carolina State has the last 2 years. And that's exactly what happened in Charleston. Eric Phoenix is a winner. South Carolina State Bulldog football. The offensive and defensive line, when you look down the MEAC, all conference teams are filled with South Carolina State Bulldogs on the lines. That bodes well for them taking on a Jackson State team.
Oh my God, it does. This is a pick 'em. Eric Phoenix can have a day. They can win this game by double digits. I truly believe that. You saw a Jackson State team who didn't come out of the gates very hot last week and were down a score in a game that they were heavily favored. This is a pick 'em. This is a spot where Jackson State is coming in this one full-blown confidence, but this is a South Carolina State team who's willing to gut it out. And Eric Phoenix, you talked about things that he's done that has proved to us people who don't watch a South Carolina State team play football each and every weekend what they're about, what their identity is. This one right here, this place is going to be bananas in Atlanta. I think this is one. I know it has the same kick time as Incarnate Word, South Dakota State. You might have to double screen this thing because this crowd may be a little more ruckus than the one in Brookings. And when I say may, I mean it absolutely will be. This is phenomenal stuff, and you get to watch TC Taylor try to do it for the first time with this squad. So there's a lot of storylines that we'll be paying attention to and keeping track of. All right, Kev, we just previewed the slate. Let's jump to a break on the other side. Bo Bellquist, fifth-year wide receiver for the North Dakota Fighting Hawks. He is this week's honorary captain of the week. Bo, somebody who multiple times this season I've said is a top three, top five wide receiver in the FCS. Well, Bo, he's no longer a Fighting Hawk. We talked about Eric Schmidt taking over for Bubba. There's a lot that we dive into. And oh, yeah. Bo dedicated his entire season to fighting childhood cancer. Stick with us during the break. When we get back, it's Bo Bellquist. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's that time of the week, the Week 16 edition. Honorary Captains of the Week. Joining me, Bo Bellquist, fifth-year wide receiver for the North Dakota Fighting Hawks. Everybody knows who Bo is. The 12 athletes we have on the list, Bo is the most tenured. He has the most yards. He has the most touchdowns. I'm a quarterback. That's why I'm excited to chop it up with Bo. Alongside him, JJ Safransky, Managing Director, Northwestern Mutual Grand Forks. JJ, I will start with you. We all have busy schedules. Thank you so much for taking time out of yours to hop on FCS Nation.
Yeah, Stone, we're happy to be here. Supporting the cause that we're supporting. It's something we all are excited to do. So thanks for having us.
And Bo, to you as well. Super busy schedule. I know you guys have tapped out for this season and you have a lot on the horizon, but nonetheless, you took time out of your day mid-December to chop it up with me, JJ, North Dakota fans, FCS Nation in general, to talk about this awesome cause. Thanks so much.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me on.
I'll ask some X's and O's questions. I've watched Bo. I've played against Bo. I've gotten my ass whooped by Bo and the rest of that North Dakota Fighting Hawks squad. You know why we're here. We are trying to put an end to childhood cancer in any way we can do that, whether it's raising funds, raising awareness. And Bo is leading the cause here. Something that I think is super important is that we have our athletes on this list lead the cause. Myself, JJ, other managing directors, managing partners, directors of recruiting, they kind of are led by these athletes as well. These guys are at the forefront, and we will dig deeper into why that is. But 12 athletes, 12 universities. Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. That's why we're here. Northwestern Mutual has been doing business with them for decades, and it's been monumental for a lot of families. Saved thousands of lives, and we'll get into some statistics on why their partnership is so important and how we kind of play a role into it. But Bo, when you were first approached by JJ, by Derek Dinger, by the squad up there in Grand Forks with an opportunity like this, your first reactions were what? And why?
I was just grateful for the opportunity to, be a part of something so amazing. And, I knew CJ Siegel. I played with him before and he was a part of it. So I knew a little bit about it, but wasn't, sure of everything. And, when JJ called, it was kind of explained it. And I was like, sure. I mean, I'm grateful to be a part of it because it's such a great cause for childhood cancer. And
And JJ, when you look at this list of athletes that we have this year, again, these athletes leading the way for us, it's not a typical list of athletes. Some of these guys, Sunday guys, some of these guys like Bo have been in the lineup, Division I university for like 4+ years and have done a lot of damage to a lot of other universities and just really stand up guys. But for Bo specifically, why was it him that you guys chose to represent you?
Yeah, I think that was probably the easiest decision we had. When you look at somebody that we're looking at representing, not only the university, partnering with us, partnering or kind of leading the cause, I think Bo exemplifies pretty much everything we're looking for. Obviously, when you look amongst his teammates, he's captain too, right? I mean, I think people don't take that lightly. And I could read off his accolades, but I don't think we have enough time on
We
this
don't. We don't.
podcast to do that. So yeah, and actually, we had the pleasure of meeting Bo's aunt, who we found out is an oncologist. So, it was a pretty close cause, I think, for home for them too, as well. And so, yeah, it probably was one of the easiest decisions we made in terms of, having Bo partner with us. And we're excited that, he agreed and we got the opportunity to do so.
And Bo, a question I'd like to ask our honorary captains is when you signed your national letter of intent, when you decided that you were going to go play football up in Grand Forks for the North Dakota Fighting Hawks, and at the time, Coach Bubba Schweiger, did you think something like this was even possible? This is our second year doing this. Last year, $50,000 was raised. We've already surpassed $50,000. We're inching towards 60 right now, and it's the first weekend of December as we sit. Did you think you were going to be a part of something that was changing thousands of families' lives and just making a difference? Did you think that you'd be a part of something this colossal?
I'd say probably not. Coming from a small town and, just being a part of something like this, like it is really cool to be a part of. You're just when you're signed for going to a school and decide that it's definitely not something I feel like you think of and think you'd be a part of. But when that opportunity came, it was like something I couldn't really pass up. Being able to help families in times of need like this is just something that I would gladly be a part of.
Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation is a leading childhood cancer research organization that provides support, whether it's for local families or families around the country that need to travel, whose children need treatment. And that's why Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation is here. And that's exactly where our money is going towards. I already mentioned 12 athletes, 12 universities. And I think we're chugging along quite nicely. Bo, up to about $2,000 right now, and his season is over. But this partnership, this initiative is never over, and Bo is still chugging along. These players are making an incredible impact. A lot of it has to do with leadership. And JJ, you already mentioned that Bo was a captain on this team. Talk about philanthropic leadership, how important it is to you, and also talk about why athletes are at the forefront of this thing and why that's advantageous to us and the cause.
Yeah, I feel like me personally, sports is, a big centerpiece of my life. It has been growing up and it continues to be, especially with our children as well. And so I feel, when you have somebody like Bo leading the charge, a lot of people look up to Bo, especially young kids. And so I think when they see people like him doing, awesome things like this, it just continues the momentum with it. They get excited. We actually gave away a bunch of stuff that Bo signed to kids, and kids were, it's fun to see the impact that that has on them too. And they'll remember things like that for a long time.
Having a chat here with Bo Bilquist, fifth year wideout for the Fighting Hawks of North Dakota, and JJ Safransky, Managing Director, Northwestern Mutual Grand Forks. My honorary captains of the week here. We're using our platform to raise money and awareness, and you can donate to Bo, and it's super, super simple. FCSNationRadio.com on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see Alex's Lemonade Stand. It has its own wing of the website. Donate, pledge, or if you just want to check the standings, you'll see Bo Bilquist's name right there, the Dinger Network office. I talked about Bo having $2,000. We want more, and there are other ways that you can participate.
Yeah, if you guys are looking to help support, I mean, obviously, of course, we can always donate right to the website. One thing that's kind of fun that we did at the tailgating events was if you take a picture with a lemon on your head and you post it to any of the social media websites, you just have to tag Alex's Lemonade Stand. And then you have to put hashtag Lemon Top Challenge and hashtag Go Hawks. And for every post that you do or that they receive, the Northwestern Mutual Foundation will donate $10 to Bo's page as well. And so that's kind of a cool addition. If you guys are looking to help, by all means, make sure you tag us too if you do that. It's a fun little challenge.
You heard the man. Hashtag Lemon Chop Challenge. Get it done. Raise some more money for Bo and for families out there who need it. Bo, seriously, thank you so much for hopping on the show this week. You gave some good perspective, and people got to learn a lot about who you are, not only as a player, but as a person. So for that, I thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Enjoyed it.
And JJ, for bringing FCS Nation Bo Bail Quest, that I thank you for.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate it, Stone. And just one last note I would add is, you know, kind of on the note of the handing of the guard, we appreciate everything Coach Swagger has done too. He's been phenomenal to us. I think everybody in the community would agree that he's exemplified. I mean, he's just been phenomenal. So we're excited that he's still staying around with the athletic department, and we're excited for Coach Schmidt to, you know, kind of make it his own and continue to lead where Bubba left off.
And that is going to do it. Stick with us after the break. It's the pick segment. You're not going to want to miss that. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Yeah.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Now time for my favorite time of the week, the pick segment. This is where Stone Lebanowitz and I go head-to-head and pick the ball games happening this week in FCS football quarterfinals game, plus this one, the Celebration Bowl between number 19 Jackson State and number 15 South Carolina State. High noon kickoff on ABC from down there in Atlanta. Who you got, Stone, in the Celebration Bowl?
I got South Carolina State, and the reason, yeah, that'd be Mr. Eric Phoenix. I have my eye on this point total, 54. I think this is a high-scoring affair. I think you're going to watch Phoenix find the end zone 3-4 times, whether it's a combination of his legs and his arm, or just his legs. He's going to do it. He's going to figure out a way in the fourth quarter to get this thing done. I'm going to be watching this one. I'm going to have a screen up from start to finish. I think this one, due to it being a pick'em, is the closest predicted game in the entire slate of all FCS games. So for that reason, I'm buying into it. I think this one's going to be worth the price of admission.
Well, Stone, I think we need to go ahead and commit to this on air so we can't go back on it. It'll be out there for anybody to listen to. But you and I are going to the Celebration Bowl next year.
Yes, sir.
I've been to a lot of things that people who know me are kind of surprised that I maybe went to. I have allegedly been to a Freaknik, and I need to go to a Celebration Bowl. I need to do that. And we're doing that next year. But in this ball game, I think the offensive and defensive line for South Carolina State going to be the difference here. And Eric Phoenix, like you mentioned, with that strong left arm and his ability to extend the play and pick up first downs, if he can't throw the ball down the field, that'll be the difference here. Take number 15, South Carolina State, to win the Celebration Bowl over Jackson State, 30-24. Number 8, Idaho, is at number 1, Montana State.
Spent a lot of time on this one. Montana State favored by a couple of touchdowns. I think it stays within that number. I think both teams come out of the gates hot here. I think you have a Montana State team who's going to be tasked with throwing the football. This front seven for Idaho, sneaky good in Jack Lane. If they want to score and want to be competitive, they're going to have to score in 3, 4, 5 play drives and in spurts. I think they have some success early on. I think they give Montana State some trouble here. Jason Eck, masterclass loading. I'm not sure. Montana State, 31. Idaho, 20.
It's tough to beat a very good team twice in a season. But offensively, Idaho is a very different team than the one the Bobcats beat on the 12th of October. Jack Lane is back, like we both mentioned. And that'll make a difference, no doubt. But Tommy Mellott and that Bobcat rushing attack, I expect them to keep that going a little bit. And Tommy's going to have to throw the ball some, too. And look, this ball game to me comes down, can Idaho make it a shootout? If they can, they have a good chance to win this football game. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle, but I like number 1 Montana State over number 8 Idaho in Bozeman. Bobcat 38, Idaho 31. Number 7 Mercer is at number 2 North Dakota State.
Something about me wants to think that Mercer can keep this close. But you watch what North Dakota State did late in that third quarter and early, and I guess the entirety of the fourth, and that was just take advantage of a team that was worn out. Although I don't think Mercer gets worn out, I think the situation wears them out. I think Mercer has this thing entertaining in that first half, but in the second half, it's a runaway the way of the Bison, and I don't personally want that to be the case. I want this to be a slug it out Duke, last man standing wins. I just don't think that's what we're going to see. So give me the Bison, 35. Mercer, 17.
Mercer gave up 66 yards a game rushing this season, y'all. That's the number one rushing defense in all of FCS. And we've talked about that defense all season long. And the Bears' secondary as good as well with two first-team All-SoCon guys back there. They're going to make Cam Miller and the NDSU receivers beat them. They're going to try to take away the run. And I think they'll be pretty successful at that. We'll see if it works. Trying to make Miller and those receivers beat you. It hasn't worked for anybody else this season. But, you know, at the same time, I have a rule, Stone. and that is don't bet against the Bison in the Fargo Dome. There's no money in it. Bison win. Number two, NDSU over number seven, Mercer, 27-13. Number six, Incarnate Word is at number three, South Dakota State.
I don't think this game's close at any point, like whatsoever, Kevin. I think this is a boat race from the jump. I think South Dakota State is a team that's playing better as the season goes on, and Incarnate Word is a team that is kind of fading as the season goes on. And obviously, you don't want that to be the case in December in Brookings. They will punish you, and they're going to do just that. So give me South Dakota State 42, Incarnate Word 10. I don't think Incarnate Word offensively, Kev, finds any success either. I think Calzada is going to be in for a day. You have DePriest. You got guys like Dallas Beanham just roaming around back there, taking out your best wideout. And this is a South Dakota State team that's not susceptible to getting beat deep down the field. And that's what Incarnate Word does best. So I don't think this one is at any point tied. You saw it 17-17 in the third quarter last year. I think this one's a blowout from start to finish.
This is a matchup of the seed with the easiest path all season on the road for a rematch against one of the seeds with the hardest path all season. Incarnate Word will need big plays to stay in this thing, and their offense has been noticeably absent for a month. Folks are saying that this SDSU defense is as good as last year's. They're not all that far off. This is a very good Jackrabbit defense. That'll be the difference here. The defense, Mark Ranowski, and that running game will be way too much for Incarnate Word here. Take number three, South Dakota State at home over Incarnate Word, 41-17. Number five, UC Davis is at number four, South Dakota.
This has track race written all over it. It really does. If you watch that first half of the game against Tarleton State last week, they traded 75-yard drives, and they continued to trade 8, 9, 10-play drives through the entirety of the game. So these defenses, I think, don't get off the bus and don't leave the locker room. You're going to watch Travis Tice. You're going to watch Lan Larris, and you're going to watch Miles Hastings take his shot down the field. But I am going with the Aggies. Give me UC Davis on the upset. I really, really, really hate to do this. And I think 170, you can play it on the money line. Miles Hastings, Lan Larison. This team defensively is probably one of the most slept on in all of the FCS. I think they win this game 38-35. Give me the Aggies, Kev.
Interesting matchup. I've been high on UC Davis since the preseason. Hastings can do the same thing to South Dakota that Tarleton State did last week. Larison's going to get his yards, folks. He's too good of a player not to. You just got to limit him and make him pay every time he carries the football if you're the Yotes defense. I believe that they'll do that, but his ability to catch the ball in the backfield, he'll have a big play when somebody stumbles or somebody gets blocked off their feet, and I think that'll make all the difference. I don't like this matchup for South Dakota. This is my upset special of the week. Take number five, UC Davis, on the road over number four, South Dakota, Aggies, 28-27. That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini, co-hosted by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. I'd like to invite all of y'all right back here next week for another episode of FCS Nation. And like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules, and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.